Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon. Welcome to today's webinar on the subject of RIOS 2016. My name is Austin Matthews. I'm the EHS Program Manager with Perry Johnson Registrars. Welcome. We have a brief agenda on this first slide. Today we'll cover a little bit about PJR, who we are, what we do. I'll cover some of the benefits to certification to a standard such as RIOS. We'll cover the key requirements of the standard, provide a general overview, and then get into a little bit more detail going through the clauses themselves, closing with a summary of the certification process for anyone who's pursuing initial registration or certification for the first time, and we'll allow for time to answer any questions at the end. PJR is accredited to grant certifications, again, for a wide variety of standards. Today we're discussing RIOS, but we also hold accreditations to a number of others, some of which you may recognize, and some of which you may have integrated into your management system in addition to the RIOS standard. Benefits of certification vary by standard and industry, location, a number of factors. However, we can focus on some common benefits to RIOS certification, including improving the organization's quality, environmental, health, and safety performance, or abbreviated as QEHS. This improvement is driven by the implementation and maintenance of the standard requirements throughout the management system, going through the process of identifying and minimizing relevant risks to the quality, environmental, and health and safety performance of the organization. Other benefits to RIOS certification include improvements in areas such as material sourcing, outsourcing controls, management commitment, employee engagement levels. Maintaining a certification like RIOS can provide a competitive advantage over other organizations who do not hold similar certifications. Being able to advertise the certification can also improve public image. There can be other financial benefits to certification depending on the standard and the area. Holding certain standard certifications may result in lower insurance premiums. The standard represents a framework for meeting customer and regulatory requirements that apply to a given organization. So going through the process again of implementing and maintaining those standard requirements, you're seeing that change to the organization's system. The standard itself represents a commitment to the responsible management of recyclables. So again, being able to advertise this certification represents that sustainable goal or that environmentally friendly approach to the organization's way of operating. RIOS can be integrated with other standards, such as R2V3 for anyone who is familiar with the electronics recycling industry. At a high level, some of the key requirements in RIOS 2016, especially when we compare RIOS 2016 to the previous version of the RIOS standard, include an emphasis on leadership, a focus on proactivity and risk management, emphasis on the intended outcomes of the management system, changes to or key requirements regarding communication and awareness expectations. These may also include stakeholder and customer requirements if there are any to which the organization is subject. Another key aspect of RIOS 2016 is the concept of change management. Just a little bit of general information about the standard. You can purchase a copy of the standard. It is not a free standard. We have some key requirements that go hand in hand with RIOS audits or the RIOS certification program. For example, the RIOS certification program requires that during recertification audits, all NCRs, even minor NCRs, require evidence of effective implementation before they can be accepted and closed. So rather than have a plan for how the finding will be addressed and having a year to enact that plan, during a recertification audit, NCRs need to be fully closed in the short term. The RIOS certification program also requires that a new auditor be assigned every 3 years for the recertification audit for a fresh set of eyes and to continue the approach or expectation of continual improvement. RIOS 2016 requires that annual memberships be maintained, including any applicable payments paid to RIOS. Standard also specifies certain areas which need to be sampled on an annual basis, or certain processes or supporting processes. Some examples of those might be training expectations, communication, monitoring and measurement, any processes in which an NCR was identified over the last 2 years. So that's some general information specific to RIOS that I wanted to share with you guys today. So now we'll get into a little bit more detail. We'll look at the actual individual clauses and subclauses in the standard. This is a high-level summary provided in the webinar today. We're not going to go through every single subclause in a great amount of detail. We're going to cover it in general. We'll go through the flow of the standard. We'll see how it's structured. We'll cover some of the requirements. Certainly, you're welcome to download a copy of the slides to reference these. Again, I recommend purchasing a copy of the standard if you haven't already done so as well, where you will find more of the, you know, the full text, the standard verbiage itself. So one thing I note on this slide is that the notes found throughout the standard are meant to provide guidance, but they are not in and of themselves auditable requirements. So certainly meant to clarify, provide clarification for the standard, not to be audited to directly. Clause 1 houses the general requirements of the standard, including scope. There's an important reminder here in Clause 1.1 to consider actions by outside providers in the scope, things like contractors, or you can review the definition for outside providers. It's a capitalized term because it's a defined term within the standard. The footprint should include activities provided by, performed by outside providers if that's relevant to your organization. It's commonly overlooked, but this is your friendly reminder to include outside providers as appropriate in the scope, in the footprint, in the consideration for your management system. RIOS outcomes outlines the implementation criteria, the intended outcomes, and calls for proactivity throughout the standard. And you'll see this reiterated in a number of ways throughout the standard. So I wanted to emphasize that early on. Clause 1.2 focuses on the quality, environmental, health, and safety infrastructure, and it covers a number of things, including that the senior management is ultimately accountable for the management system and the effectiveness of the management system. So this section emphasizes that commitment, that involvement on the part of senior management, and assigns responsibility to the senior management to ensure that the resources allocated to the management system are sufficient, whether that means delegating some of those responsibilities to qualified individuals, maybe identifying a management representative, or to fulfill the roles themselves. The point is that they are ultimately accountable. Document and record keeping controls are covered in 1.3, and these are very similar to the expectations in some of the ISO standards, such as ISO 14001, 2015, if you're familiar with that standard, where the verbiage compared to previous versions of the standard allows for a greater level of flexibility, recognizing that technology is changing and the way companies maintain their procedures or their records may take a variety of forms. Clause 2 covers policy, and it includes requirements related to evaluating impacts and risks, what needs to be included in annual reviews, again reiterating the expectations for senior management commitment, and a number of things that need to be included within the policy. Clause 3 focuses on planning. Subclause 3.1 focuses on identifying the RIOS footprint. And again, here we see expectations for organizations to be proactive in their approach. You need to assess things like purchasing, source material acquisition, transport, delivery, perhaps some of the areas that you may not initially think of when considering the footprint. The footprint can also include positive impacts. They don't have to necessarily be all negative, and they very well may include positive impacts. This also needs to be kept up to date, reviewed for changes, used for assessments prior to making changes. We'll talk more about that change management concept. And again, this goes hand in hand with the expectations for organizations to be proactive. So the RIOS footprint is not something that is created and then put on a shelf to collect dust. In 3.1, you see subclauses relevant to each of the relevant facets. We've got quality risks, environmental impacts, and health and safety risks. So all of these need to be evaluated and included in turn. 3.1.4 focuses on legal requirements. It includes any product requirements, if applicable, and it speaks to the controls regarding legal requirements, which do need to be documented. covers product, service, and customer requirements. And this requires not only documenting the requirements themselves, but also the methodologies planned for monitoring whether those requirements are being met. These might include product requirements, customer requirements, controls for outsourced activities, source material specifications. It could include a number of things, and this will vary by organization. The section also requires verification of those controls or those expectations, as well as records of conformity. 3.1.6 covers other stakeholder requirements. So differing from what is covered in 3.1.5, this one would cover stakeholders. Again, I believe that's a defined term. Yep. It's a defined term within the standard. So looking at who the stakeholders are as relevant to each organization, again, this will vary, as well as their respective requirements, if they have any. If there are relevant requirements, controls need to be implemented accordingly, and this is to be reviewed annually. So take a look at the stakeholder definition to get some additional ideas or ensure that you've covered all relevant stakeholders. Some examples to get you going might be the owners of the organization, the landlord for the facility if you are renting, insurance companies, should they have any requirements of their own, and so on. Improvement planning. So these subclauses focus on the identification and achievement of objectives and goals. There are required inputs to be considered or items to be considered. The requirements for written plans regarding how the goals will be achieved, specifically identifying things like the individual tasks it will take to achieve the goal, any resources needed to achieve the goal, the assignment of responsibilities, due dates for those tasks or goal achievements, and how the goal will eventually be measured or evaluated to know whether or not it has been achieved. Change management is covered in 3.3. I mentioned this briefly earlier. So again, we're echoing the proactive expectations of the standard. 3.3 requires a written plan to review the footprint for relevant changes prior to implementing a change to the quality environmental health and safety management system. So here we have requirements to proactively plan and assess the potential for impact before a change is made, rather than implementing a change and reacting to the impact it has on your management system. These could be changes needed to a number of things. PPE, training, changes to procedures, changes to equipment, the floor plan or the flow of the facility, other types of controls like machine guarding. Does it change risk level? Again, better or worse, because some things could be positive. So are you replacing a chemical with a less corrosive alternative? Trying to think of some other examples, but the idea again is being proactive in your approach. So change management is a formal process for evaluating the impact a change will have before it is introduced to the management system. Clause 4 focuses on implementation. Recycler knowledge is covered in 4.1. This includes both competency and awareness, and the standard in those respective subclauses specifies topics that need to be considered or trained on, given the relative impact on the intended outcomes of the management system that certain groups of employees or job responsibilities could potentially have. Obviously, records are expected to be maintained to show evidence of meeting these requirements. In terms of competency, there's also requirements to verify effectiveness of actions taken, such as training. 4.2 covers communication, with a formal requirement to document communication plans. And then the subclauses following detail different types of communication that we may encounter: customer communications, supplier communications, outside supplier communications. If you're familiar with the previous version of RIOS, some of these have changed names a bit. So outside suppliers might be communication with contractors. Supplier communications might include any source control requirements, how to handle a load rejection, how to deal with errors, things like that. External communication could be anything not covered in the above categories. So visitors, stakeholders, the local fire department. There could be a number of groups or individuals that fall into this external communication category. 4.3 focuses on operational control. 4.3.1 covers source materials, the controls and requirements surrounding dealing with suppliers. 4.3.2 covers outsourced providers, products, and services. So these criteria would be similar to purchasing controls. Do you have documented specifications? Do you have controls relative to a outside provider's potential to impact the quality, environmental, health and safety, outcomes of your management system or your organization? How are you maintaining records of evaluating and monitoring the performance and the interactions with those outside providers? You can see section 4.3.2 for additional requirements or topics to be assessed. Quality controls are covered in 4.4. The section requires documentation of any specifications and criteria that are relevant, worker instructions as well, whether you're using work instructions, procedures, what have you, that would be relevant to quality controls. And then we have the respective subclauses for environmental and health and safety as well. Again, the concept here being that the controls relevant to those subsections are documented and maintained. 4.7 covers emergency preparedness. This would be the section that we would find requirements for the emergency plan or those emergency response expectations. And there is overlap in this section with the communication expectations found in 4.2. So clearly the emergency response expectations would need to be communicated to any relevant parties. Clause 5 covers checking and corrective actions. 5.1 covers monitoring and measurement. So this specifies, for example, the items that need to be detailed or included in the monitoring and measurement plan. And there are some subsections here. Anything that requires monitoring needs to be detailed. What are those activities? How are you going to monitor them? What exactly are you measuring? When it comes to compliance with those legal and other requirements you identified earlier on, we have a requirement for annual evaluations of compliance with those identified or applicable requirements. So not only now are we looking at what requirements the organization is subject to, we're also looking at whether they are adhering to those requirements. This section also includes verbiage about who would be considered competent to evaluate compliance. Calibration and maintenance is required for relevant monitoring equipment. So what requirements would be relevant given the types of equipment your organization uses to fulfill the monitoring requirements it has identified? And what will happen, what actions will be taken if any out-of-tolerance monitoring devices are identified? The outputs of monitoring and measuring, or those monitoring and measurement results, are required to be an input in the management review, meaning that they are required to be reported on and discussed during the management review. 5.2 covers nonconformances, corrective and preventive actions. 5.2.2 specifically focuses on EHS incident investigations, and the RIOS 2016 standard does require investigation for all EHS incidents. And you'll notice that incidents on this slide is capitalized because, again, capitalized terms are defined within the standard. So take a close look at the definition for incidents in the RIOS standard because it does include near misses. It can be very common to find an organization who does not investigate near misses because no damage was done, no one was injured, and that is not an approach that's in alignment with the proactivity expectations for the RIO standard. You've missed an opportunity if you've not investigated a near miss. Someone just as likely could have been injured and may the next time, because you're not taking any action to prevent that from happening. So rather than reacting to an injury, the next time a very similar incident occurs, you can proactively investigate it and identify what controls would prevent it in the future. This section also is where we see the requirement for previous NCRs to be assessed, not just for 1 year or one audit cycle, but actually for two audit cycles in the RIOS 2016 standard. This is to get a more robust sampling of effectiveness rather than just the limited scope of 1 year. Perhaps that issue hasn't come up again, or we don't have a large enough sample size to really assess whether those controls are effectively preventing recurrence. So this allows for a larger sampling size to ensure any changes made as a result of a nonconformity continue to be effective. Section 5.3 covers internal audits. RIOS requires annual internal audits. And these are full system evaluations, so that's a key thing to remember. RIOS also specifies in 5.3 that these are conducted prior to certification or recertification. So this comes into play when we are scheduling our internal audits. We need to plan ahead. We need to ensure that those internal audits are completed prior to that initial registration audit, and then the recertification audit that's performed every 3 years to renew the certification. You'll want to make sure that your internal audits are scheduled in advance so that that internal audit report, any nonconformities, can be part of the scope of the audit. And this is, again, specified in 5.3. It also requires that written plans be maintained for how these requirements will be met and what the requirements for your organization's internal audit program entails. Clause 6 covers management review. It specifies required inputs and outputs that need to be included in the management review proceedings. So thinking back to the monitoring and measurement that we covered, or the internal audit outputs, the standard will specifically include items that are required to be part of that management review activity. So this would be an easy finding to avoid by ensuring that your management review at a minimum covers all of those items. Perhaps there are additional items that are relevant to your organization, but it would be low-hanging fruit to overlook some of the required inputs and outputs, and it would be a shame not to include them. The standard hands that list to you. You can find that in Clause 6. For anyone pursuing certification for the first time, again, I highly recommend purchasing a copy of the standard. First steps include establishing the quality environmental health and safety documentation to meet the RIOS standard requirements, conduct any training that's necessary to meet the standard requirements, implement those standard requirements, including conducting your internal audit, your compliance evaluation, as well as a management review. You'll need a contract with a certification body to conduct those audits, such as PJR. The initial registration is typically completed through stage one and stage two audits, which we'll talk about more in a moment. And you'll need to address any resulting nonconformities before a certificate can be issued. The registration audit consists of two stages, as I mentioned. Stage one audit is a documentation review of the management system to assess the framework of documentation implemented, to ensure it meets the requirements of the standard and ensure the organization is ready for their stage two audit. The stage two audit is a full system audit. It looks at all of the requirements of the standard. It samples the different processes throughout the organization to really get a sense of how effective the implementation of those requirements or those documents reviewed at stage one has been. Again, any nonconformities identified do need to be resolved prior to certificate issuance. Once a certificate is issued, it's good for 3 years, so you'll have two subsequent years of surveillance audits or two audit cycles. Those audits can be semi-annual or annual, depending on your contract. And surveillance audits are partial system audits. They are less robust than the stage two. They don't necessarily cover all of the requirements, but do conduct a sampling to cover all of the requirements between the two surveillance audit years. The third year of the cycle is the recertification audit. This is similar to the stage two in that it's a full system audit. Everything is sampled and the result is a new certificate after any nonconformities have been resolved. It's a brief summary of the registration process for anyone who is pursuing initial certification. If you haven't already done so, please go ahead and type any questions that you might have into the chat field. I'll give you a moment in case anyone is typing. And I'm going to go to the last slide of my presentation, which includes the contact information. Again, my name's Austin Matthews. I'm the EHS Assistant Program Manager. You can reach me by phone or email. I also have the sales department contact information. Should you be interested in a quote for certification. Okay, let's see if we have any questions. Again, a copy of today's slides, as well as a recording of the webinar, will be made available on PJR's website. Within the next couple of days. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions. I can hang out for another moment in case someone's typing. And we do offer these webinars throughout the calendar year, so feel free to tune into any other subjects that we're providing or another version of the RIOS webinar later this year. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today. If you have a RIOS audit coming up, I hope the content was helpful. And please reach out should you have any questions. Have a great day.